The Dolo White Podcast is brought to you by Cinema Anywhere Nashville. Follow Cinema Anywhere Nashville on Instagram and book your indoor or outdoor cinema experience today. Hey, it's Dolo White, and this is the Dolo White Podcast. Now, I'm 43 years old, and no shade to my parents' generation, but we found better ways to parent as time has gone by. I always say that our parents did the best they could with the tools that they had, and I truly do believe that, but now we have better tools. We know to have more honest and open conversations with our children, no matter how uncomfortable the conversations may be. We know that for us to have a real relationship with them, they need to see us as human beings with flaws instead of perfect individuals who they should set out to please. Now, my guest today is Rebecca Rowland, an oral and written language specialist in the neurology department of the Children's Hospital Boston and lecturer at Harvard University. She recently wrote a book titled The Art of Speaking with Children, The Simple Keys to Nurturing Kindness, Creativity, and Confidence in Kids, which, if you're a parent or planning to be a parent, you should rush to read, but not right now. Finish this episode first, then rush to read it. Welcome to the Dolo White Podcast.
Polo Giddy. Live.
Yeah. What's up?
This is not live. It's completely recorded.
Broadcasting from one of the top recording studios in all of Nashville, Tennessee.
Yeah, that's not true at all. I'm probably at home doing this.
He's been called one of the greatest thinkers of his time.
Literally no one has ever called me that. I do kind of agree with it, though.
Right here.
A 2017 recipient of the Nobel Peace Prize.
That's just a flat out lie.
Talking politics, community, race, religion, entertainment, sports, and whatever the fuck else.
Yeah.
It's the Dolo White Podcast.
Episode 65 now, the Dolo White Podcast. My guest today, very excited to have you on, Rebecca Rowland. You're the author of The Art of Talking with Children.
Exactly. Nice to be here.
I have a four-year-old little girl, and my wife and I are very... We try to pick our words very wisely, and I think that's some of what your book is about, but I see the first thing on it is rich talk. So let's talk exactly about what rich talk is.
Yeah. So I really think about how can we have the most meaningful and enjoyable conversations with our kids that also build their skills. And rich talk is my way of doing that. So it really has three things. I think about the ABCs of rich talk. A being adaptive, like you're always going with their mood, with their interest, things like that. B being back and forth. So you're talking, but you're also listening. And your child is also doing that too. And C is child driven. So you start with what interests your child, what they're worried about, what they're engaged by, rather than coming in with your own agenda. So actually when parents say, well, what do I talk about? I often think, well, what does your child want to talk about? And that's actually a lot easier than having to come up with it yourself.
Almost like a Montessori approach where it's kind of a child-led conversations with your kid,
exactly.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that. That's the kind of parents we're trying to be. Now, as a parent, I know you're a parent as well. There are frustrating moments in especially, I think with all ages, honestly, like I don't think that really goes away at any age.
Exactly.
How do you recommend communicating in those frustrated times, be it both when the parent and the child is having a frustrated moment as well?
For sure. Yeah. So I think there's a couple things. Sometimes I do actually ironically think we can talk too much at those moments. Sometimes we think we can fix a tantrum by talking kids out of it. And that's usually not. So I would recommend actually reflecting after the fact, on our own emotions, on, what could have gone better, what strategies can we try next time so that we can avoid that kind of tantrum. But in the moment, to really think about kind of regulating yourself. So whether that means taking a breath, taking a step back, using fewer words, maybe just even using gestures. So, the milk needs to go there. We need to clean this up, with something very simple. And using words like when instead of, we can't. So we can go out when this is done. We can, play when we've cleaned up, that kind of thing. So making it into something that's positive, but still getting across that message that this thing needs to happen.
When you're talking about this stuff, I know a lot of people who are parent, maybe the way that they were parented, probably listen and think, this is crazy. This is not, the kids are going to do what I say. But what you're talking about, your book is scientifically backed with studies and research and all kinds of things. So can we talk kind of about the scientific part of your book?
Yeah, sure. So my book actually intentionally blends stories from my parenting and my friend's parenting with actual research from neuroscience, from psychology, all about the power of conversations with kids. And so there's a ton of research now showing that conversation builds all these skills in kids, but it even rewires their brains. So we're actually finding that it's not just the number of words you talk to kids, but actually how much they're talking back. So what we call conversational turns. And you can think about it like a kind of dance. So actually you're talking, but then your child's talking and you respond to them. And actually it's this kind of dance where you're going back and forth that really helps kids the most.
And I think it's also important to be honest with kids. I think we come from, at least I did, I came from a family where like my parents were like, yo, we never smoked weed and we never, you know what I mean? Like,
exactly. Yeah,
yeah, you did. But I think it's, there's something to be said about being honest and having open conversations with your kids as well, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So I talk a lot about sort of bringing your whole self to the conversation. Obviously, you want to keep it, you know, child appropriate.
Right.
So you don't want to go too far. But really thinking about the fact that you are a full person and your child wants to know you as a full person, you know, not to be just sort of this perfect, you know, person who's never done anything wrong or never made a mistake. And I really emphasize even the fact of talking about your past mistakes and talking about things that went wrong as really helping your child realize that even, you know, people they look up to can make mistakes and can learn from them.
Yeah. And I think it's also important for kids to, like you said, kind of look at their parents as actual human beings instead of on this pedestal of, ooh, my parents are this perfect being. I need to strive to be this. No, you need to be who you are. Yeah, you need to be who you are, and whoever that is great, right?
Exactly. And I think that gives a message to your kids as well, that, you know, that they don't have to be perfect. They can try to do their best, but, you know, if they're not perfect, that doesn't mean there's anything wrong with them.
I see on the sheet here, it says fostering children's empathy. And I think if there's one thing for the future generation needs is more empathetic adults. So what are some tools you can give kids at a young age to help foster that empathy so they become then empathetic adults, and maybe one day we don't live in, you know, a divided country the way we do now, right?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I think one thing, actually, it's ironic because we think about empathy as directed towards other people. You know, that means feeling what other people are feeling. But really, empathy starts with being comfortable and compassionate towards yourself and recognizing and accepting all of your emotions rather than saying, oh, it's bad that I feel sad or it's bad that I feel angry. Recognizing that you can feel all of these things. It doesn't mean you can go around, you know, punching people. You want to think about how you can manage your emotions, but recognizing that all of those emotions are okay in yourself and also in other people. I also think about empathy as not just helping other people. So we think about kindness as being helpful, but empathy is really about helping other people in the way they want to be helped. So, for example, you might have a neighbor and she wants you to come visit her, but she doesn't want flowers. You know, she doesn't like those kinds of things. So if you don't know that about her, if you don't learn that about her, you might just do what you think is helpful. But really to figure out, well, what is this person? You know, what is this full person in front of me? And how can I be helpful to them? I think that's a key to empathy also.
I think that at least I come from a family that always gave advice, even when it wasn't necessarily warranted. Right. And I think it's important. I try to remember that, like, not always give my kid advice to, like, actually listen to what she's saying and just, you know, try to react accordingly. But maybe she doesn't need me to tell her what I would do in her situation. Right.
Yeah. And I think one thing that's really key is actually sometimes even kids who are pretty young, even that age, can tell you if you ask them, you know, do you want advice or do you want just me to listen? You know, and actually kind of asking from them, what is it that you need from me? And what's funny is I've done that with my own kids and now they actually turn it around. Sometimes they do it themselves. You know, they're saying like, do you want me to really talk about that? Or do you just want me to say yes and move on? You know? And so it's kind of funny because you see that once you do this a little bit, kids often take it and run with it.
Your book covers kids of all ages all the way through adolescence, correct? And obviously I said my daughter's 4 and I've heard interesting stories to say the least from friends that I have of teenagers. So what is some advice for teenagers? And
So I think it can be a really fun time. It can also obviously be a challenging time.
It's not what I've heard.
Kids are shut down or they're on their screens, things like that. And so one thing I think about is just really seeing what is engaging to your child at that moment and seeing if you can join them with that. So even if it's something you might not typically do, so maybe it's that they are playing this video game with their friends they really like, and you've always said, oh, I don't want to see that. I don't want to hear about that, you know, but maybe just take the moment and say, well, can you teach me a little bit about how to do that? Or, you know, can you show me how it works? You know, and that actually can be a really great gateway just to have kids feel that you're validating some of their interests. And that if they were maybe more shut down, well, you know, it's okay. My parent is saying, you know, I can be interested in this too, or I can try this thing that I might not have tried before.
Yeah. And I think we all went through that time in our life with our parents, where our parents just didn't understand what it was we were listening to, what we were watching, what we were doing. Exactly. And I think a little effort there could probably go a long way. Have you guys found in some of the research that the groundwork you lay at younger ages helps your child open up during adolescence? Like, I think, like you said, children a lot of times shut down during that period of their life, especially try to shut their parents off. I think that's probably pretty common. But if you have those open lines of communication young, does that translate over?
It definitely does. Yeah. So we do find that actually if you set that groundwork and that your kid especially feels that they can come to you when there's an issue, when they're worried about something, that really does help them feel they can come to you, you know, about romantic relationships or about, you know, stresses about bullying or other things that come to them later in life. And so I think that actually doing this, if you have a younger child, I think it's a perfect time. Obviously, it's never too late, but it can be really great if you have a younger child to set this as a foundation.
Yeah, you want to build trust with your child. You don't want your child to, I never want my child to feel ashamed to tell me something, no matter what it is. I want her to be as open and honest, no matter, you know, what the age is. Sparking children's curiosity. What are some tips to do that?
Yeah. So I think about, obviously, younger kids especially will ask these why questions, you know, like, why is this happening? Why is that?
Yes. My kid's in that phase right now. Yes. Very much.
Exactly. And so recognizing that you don't always need to do this, but once in a while, actually take a question and run with it. You know, actually say, well, why is the sky not green? You know, for example, well, actually, let's think about it. You know, what makes the sky blue? I don't really know. Can we look that up? Can we figure it, you know, who would know something about that? So actually kind of figuring out like how you can follow the line of their curiosity. And you can do that with older kids as well. They're probably not asking that question, but they might be asking, you know, like, what happens if, you know, we all ran out of food or something, you know? And so it's like, well, let's think about what would happen. How could we stop that from happening? You know, and starting to engage your child with these questions, kind of following that stream of the why, and not just sort of brushing it off saying like, oh, that's a hard question, I don't know, and then leave it at that.
I see here on the sheet as well, encouraging kids to embrace challenges, which to me, there are two type of kids. They're very reserved kids and very cautious kids, and kids that just they come out of the womb going 90 miles an hour. You know what I mean? And for parents of more cautious kids, what are some tips to help embrace challenges?
Yeah. So I think of a couple things. One is just to help them set their own goals. So sometimes we tend to sort of, without even meaning to, judge things with our kids. So we'll see a painting or a picture they made and like, oh, that's so beautiful, or oh, that's so fabulous. And actually helping them, you know, decide what they think about it. You know, do you like that? Or what do you like about it? How could you make it better so that you liked it better? That kind of thing. So putting the judge back onto them rather than saying that you're going to be the judge of what they do. I think that's one big thing.
That reminds me of a meme I saw recently that was something, or it, maybe it was a tweet, and somebody said something to the effect of, don't tell your kids you're proud of them. Say you should be proud of yourself. Do you agree with that sentiment?
Yes, I do. I mean, I think there's always, you know, I would say there's always room for saying, you know, I love you, I'm proud of you.
Right.
You know, I think in general, yeah, sure, that's a great message to have. But I do think that sometimes when we, you know, get to the specifics of every day, we can overdo it just in terms of our praise and say, and actually there's, ironically, there's research saying that especially for kids who have low self-esteem, sometimes overpraising them can make their self-esteem even worse.
Oh, wow.
Because they actually feel like, oh my, they're overdoing it because they don't think I'm really good at it. Or they think, you know, they're kind of like overcompensating for something that's wrong. So actually to help them feel stronger in themselves, really focus on kind of, well, what can you do? How can you see your own progress? And that can help, you know, them become much more independent also.
Does that also kind of maybe develop some kind of mentality of, I have to please my parents? Is there something in there as well?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I see that a lot. And I've even seen that with my own kids. You know, they do something and they run to you. You know, what do you think about this? What do you, you know, do you like my drawing? Do you like this? And, you know, and it's so easy to say like, oh, yes, I love it. Or, oh, yes, it's perfect. You know, and we obviously that's a natural response. I'm not to say never say that.
Right.
It is interesting if you can sometimes really put it back on them and say, even things like talking about the effort. So, you know, oh, that looks like it took you a lot of work to make, you know, or like, or what was your, what was the hardest part or what was the most fun part of that? You know, so helping them focus on the process also rather than the product, that can really help them over the long term too, when they're kind of doing a large product or a large project and they actually need, you know, to be persistent with it.
I don't know that you talked about this in the book, but I've got one more question for you before I let you out of here. I know you're doing a million of these today, but when it comes to talking with your kids about sex, and this is a conversation I've had with an expert, just a whole episode of the podcast on that. You're more in favor of just being as straightforward and honest and open as possible.
Definitely. Yes. And there's actually research that's really interesting from the Netherlands showing that, you know, parents, when cultures where they're more open, they actually, kids are practicing more safe sex. They're waiting longer to have sex and things like that because they don't necessarily do it out of rebellion. So it's much more of a conversation with the parents. So I do really emphasize that that, just like everything else, is really best when there's kind of a trusting relationship between the parents and children.
I agree too. Rebecca Rowland, the book is The Art of Talking with Children. Get it, read it, and change your mindset. Thank you so much for doing this today.
No, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Cinema Anywhere Nashville. You can book your indoor or outdoor cinema experience right now, starting at only $350. Cinema Anywhere Nashville provides your choice of a 16, 24, 36, or even 100-foot screen, plus projector setup and sound system. This is a super dope service that wouldn't just be great for corporate and work events, but also birthday and holiday parties, or if you want to have a romantic evening with your significant other. Cinema Anywhere Nashville is perfect for all of those things. They have the right experience for you. Follow them on Instagram right now at Cinema Anywhere Nashville and book your cinema experience today. I want to say thank you once again to my guest, Rebecca Rowland. Make sure you check out that book. Like I said, especially if you're planning to become a parent or are already a parent, read that book, The Art of Speaking with Children. Make sure you follow me on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, Clubhouse, everything else at DolaWhite101, DolaWhite101. 101. And also remember, no matter what platform you're listening on right now, hit that follow button, hit that subscribe button. My podcast is free. It costs you nothing to subscribe to it. So what are you waiting for? Go ahead and do that. If you're listening on Apple or Spotify, rate and review. I always appreciate kind words. If you have something bad to say, I understand that not everybody's going to like what I do. Having said that, you can kind of keep those to yourself. But if you want to say something good, write me a good review. Leave me those 5 stars or whatever the hell they have. All right. Definitely appreciate that love. Back next week with a brand new episode. My guest will be Tia Patterson, the creator of A Year of Minimalism. Super dope episode coming your way next week. Thank you for checking out the podcast. I'm out.